I think we've really boiled climate change down to food in a way that doesn't make sense to me.
Not us. It wasn't you and me.
Thank you.
They did that.
Yeah.
It is much easier to blame the individual than to accept responsibility and accountability as a system.
Love that.
This is the system saying, oh no, you cannot hold me accountable for this. Instead, I'm going to put the burden back on you.
You're listening to Burnt Toast. I'm Virginia Soul Smith. Today, I'm chatting with Christina Johnson, who you may know as Encouraging Dietitian on Instagram and TikTok. Christina is a registered dietitian in Dallas, Texas, specializing in eating disorders, disordered eating, and body image work. She also talks a lot about the intersection of consumerism, diet culture, and white supremacy. And that giant topic is a lot of what we're going to get into today. I will be honest, unlearning consumerism is work I am truly just at the beginning, of thinking about. It's a topic I have so many questions about, and Christina has a lot of answers, but they are the kind of answers that raise even more questions and ask us to do more work. So I will be really excited and interested to hear your responses to this one. To join the conversation, click the link in your episode description to come over to the episode's page on Burnt Toast and join the comments section. I'd love to know how you're wrestling with your own shopping habits and how you see diet culture showing up there. Now let's get into my conversation with Christina, but first a quick break. If you like the conversations we have here and want to support the show, I'd love for you to do one or all of the following things. First, make sure to subscribe or follow the show in your podcast player so you never miss an episode. Second, rate or review the podcast to help other folks find it. Just scroll down in Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen, tap the stars, and leave us a little note. We like 5 stars, please, and lots of butter. Third, subscribe to the Burnt Toast newsletter. It's free and gets you every podcast transcript, plus all of my essays and reported features right in your inbox. If you want even more, become a paid subscriber for just $5 a month or $50 for the year. You'll get lots of bonus content, you'll keep this an ad and sponsor-free space, and you'll enable us to compensate guests for their time and labor, which is key to centering marginalized voices in this space. You can join the list for free or check out the paid options by clicking the link in your episode description or heading to virginiasoulsmith.substack.com. Whatever you do, thanks for listening and supporting anti-diet body liberation journalism.
A lot of my work centered around people's relationship with food, their body, and not just the like individual things that they bump up against that impact those, but also the systemic cultural things that they bump up against that really impact their relationship with food and their body, and helping them figure out how to navigate those spaces. Because sometimes we can't change the things we bump up against, but we can change the way we respond.
You do really amazing work connecting our personal experiences of diet culture to racism, to classism, to all of these systems of oppression. There was one post you posted recently, and I saw Aubrey Gordon shared it, and I shared it, and we were like, oh my God, Christina just nailed it. And you wrote, it seems that many of us have conflated rejecting the diet mentality with dismantling diet culture. Yeah, I see that all the time. So talk a little bit about what is rejecting diet mentality? What is dismantling the system? Why are these not the same thing?
Yeah, I'm so glad that y'all like that post. That one was like sitting internally and I was like, oh, I got to just put this out there in the world and just let it do what it needs to do.
Yeah.
Rejecting the diet mentality is a very individual process. It's saying within myself, where have I internalized this idea that I need to be on a diet, a specific type of diet, so on and so forth. And so it's examining all these beliefs you have about food and rejecting anything that you do not need, want, or serves you no purpose, especially as it relates to diet culture. Again, that's a more individual process versus dismantling diet culture is very much systemic. That is now a communal practice, and that one individual cannot dismantle that system. And part of dismantling that system is acknowledging it for what it is, but acknowledging it as the fact that it's not the system itself. It is a tentacle on the system, right? It's a root of the system, right? So in order for me to dismantle diet culture, I have to acknowledge the fact that is a part of racism. It is a part of white supremacy. If I can't acknowledge that, I can't dismantle it.
Right.
And so we end up sort of in this stuck space where we're performing the dismantling of diet culture because we won't acknowledge its roots, its origins.
And when we're performing it through focusing on our own stuff, we're maybe making our own lives easier or more comfortable without really ever getting at the root of it.
Yeah, we're not getting at the root of it, and we're not making it any easier for people who have a harder time than what we might have. Because part of diet culture is that it doesn't just harm certain groups of people, it harms all of us. And so the fact that we're not dismantling means that we're not dismantling it for people in larger bodies, for people with disabilities, for people in poverty, right? We are leaving them to suffer and endure this diet culture that we're refusing to dismantle because we will not acknowledge and eradicate the systems from which it originated.
Do you feel like for most folks, the personal work has to come first in order to understand the larger system?
I think for most people, the personal work does need to come first. There's a lot of brain space occupied with dieting and diet culture and our relationship with food. And that amount of brain space does not leave a lot of extra room to sit with the discomfort of acknowledging these systems and the harm that they do. And so I think giving someone the space to work through their own stuff oftentimes, one, frees up brain space, but two, gives them good skills to cope with discomfort. Because the discomfort you're going to have with your own internal work is not going to be nearly as uncomfortable as acknowledging these big systems and acknowledging all the areas of our lives that they touch.
I feel like people are going to be listening to this and nodding and then thinking like, wait, but I need an example. Like, okay, the personal work might be I'm letting myself eat brownies now. What would the bigger work look like?
The bigger work is, why do we care that much about brownies? Why are we so fixated on who can and cannot eat brownies? And why is this person allowed to have a brownie on the internet, but that person isn't? Why do we need to make brownies do something for us? Can't that dessert just be a dessert? Why do my brownies now need to offer me protein? Why do they now need to be this extra pack of fiber? What's going on here?
Why are we making them with black beans? Yes.
Now we've moved past me, the individual, and we're asking, why is this not equally and equitably accessible to everyone else?
That's a really helpful way to think about, like, if you're starting with your personal stuff, then thinking of who else doesn't have access to this or is being impacted by this. That's a helpful way to think about it. Are there any other kind of common examples that come up for folks?
I've been like sitting with this idea of what does it mean to perform our relationship with food to ourselves? And I think this is one of those things where it's like, oh, I should be cooking for myself. I should want to eat these fruits and vegetables. So I'm going to purchase them with the hope and the fascination that I will eventually have the internal desire to do that. And then we sit here and we've got this wasted food because it's like, but I don't want to cook that. I don't want to eat that. I don't even know what to do with it. But if I buy it, I'll figure it out. That'll give me the incentive to figure it out.
I mean, you just explained why I stopped joining CSAs, which I do really believe in as a concept. But it was me with a fridge full of kohlrabi every week, not wanting to eat kohlrabi more than maybe once and not knowing what else to do with it. And it just going bad and then the guilt.
Yeah, when it's like, first of all, most of us don't know what to do with kohlrabi, so I can't blame you there. So in the sense of like, oh, I should be cooking. Oh, this convenience food, it's quote, bad for me, right? This prepackaged thing is bad for me. Oh, I'm allowed to do it if I compensate in this other way, as opposed to really taking a step back and being like, why do we care who is and is not eating something convenient? Why is there even a moral concept around this? Why am I good for avoiding this or bad for using this? What even is the history of convenience food? Because the history of a convenience item was that historically, you know, after we somewhat get rid of slavery, because it's still legal in a lot of states, most Black women worked as housekeepers, right? They maintained the houses of these people that they no longer were owned by, but now just worked for, right? So if that family is no longer doing their own cooking, but eventually, you know, Black women move away from this domestic labor. Well, who's doing the cooking? Enter convenience foods.
Wow.
Right? Convenience foods started as a luxury.
Yes, that makes sense.
And the fact that now we associate convenience foods with poverty and we don't want to be associated with that. So we say, oh, I can't do that. If I do that, I'm now a bad person. Right. I should be cooking for myself because that's the morally superior thing to do.
It's like now cooking for yourself is the luxury act, but it's luxury embedded with morality. It's all twisted together.
Yes. There's the individual aspect of that, right? Of like, I need to change my relationship with convenience foods. But then the social cultural aspect of that is we as a lot need to change our relationship with convenience foods, right? So that it is now just a neutral concept. Mm-hmm. If you want it and you have access to it, go for it. If you don't want it, that's fine. But you don't really have to talk about why it is or isn't a good thing.
I'm certainly someone who has really embraced convenience foods in my own life. And, you know, I talk about a lot on the podcast and in my writing about how important it is to stop demonizing it. But I'm always doing it with all these explanations of why they're valuable, there's an element of still apologizing for it in there. Like, it's okay to use convenience foods because I'm separated and it's just me having to get food on the table. And but I'm, like, justifying, like, that it's, like, useful as a single mom to have convenience foods, which it is, but I shouldn't have to.
You don't need to explain that to anybody.
Exactly. Exactly.
You have those convenience foods because that's what works for your life, and yeah. That's that.
But mm-hmm. I think, how often do I hear from a friend, like, well, I guess it's okay, we're doing pizza tonight, you know, as if we failed at some larger purpose.
Pizza has carb, fat, and protein. It serves a purpose and it meets the needs of the people. It's yep. okay.
You talk a lot about the intersection of consumerism and diet culture. On the one hand, we're talking about understanding the history of convenience foods. Let's not demonize them anymore. Let's not moralize it. Here for that. On the other hand, there's a lot of consumerism bound up in not just convenience foods. All, you know, my CSA was also a form of consumerism. So talk to me about how you think about these issues.
Yeah, I think it in some ways goes back to that performance piece of, like, have you objectified your relationship with food where it's no longer just for you, but it's for these other people around who observe it? And are you looking at it through the lens of these other people who are observing it, right? I think that's when we really start to step into this consumerism piece, right? Are we performing it for the internet, where now our objective is to see how are the people on the internet going to respond? Likes, clicks, you know, shares, whatever. Yeah. Are we performing this for the other people in our life because we want them to think a certain thing about us or perceive this certain thing from us that will drive us to buy these things, right? But then also there is the whole, we are constantly served ads. Ads are everywhere. I have a neutral relationship with ads at this point in time, but sometimes they can be, you know, whatever. It's how am I interacting with this? Am I using this as a way to deal with my feelings as opposed to other ways of dealing with my feelings? Am I using this as escapism? Am I using this for a form of status? If I buy this thing, then people will accept me in this particular crowd that I want to exist in. I'm looking at the Stanley Cup. It's an interesting line because it's so individual, but I think the way that I sort of conceptualize it to, like, teach it to other people is the idea of, like, what do you need, right, to feed yourself adequately, consistently, and then where are you adding some bits of fun in there? Because we can't sacrifice fun. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, things stop being sustainable. We're getting into the intention of this. Why am I buying another cup of the same one that I already have three mm-hmm. other colors in? Why? Mm-hmm. Is it that I need this new color? Is the cup now my purse? Why? I was listening to a podcast about the Stanley Cup, and one of the girls in that episode had 11 of them.
Yeah.
Each of them cost $50.
Yeah.
11?
Yeah.
Why? What are you doing with 11 cups? How do you plan to use those 11 cups that all do the same thing? Also, what are you going to do when the tide shifts? Because it's going to shift.
Right.
Now, what do you do with those 11 cups that you've purchased that are no longer cool or trendy?
Right.
In the food sense, okay, what are you doing with this food item that you didn't have a plan for or maybe only had one purpose for and never found another purpose for? Now it's just sitting in your pantry collecting dust.
I've definitely done that with... Well, with water bottles, for sure. I'm trying to think of a food example. I mean, for sure, like when the whole grain stuff was really, you know, like I have many boxes of quinoa or other grains that I bought thinking this was something we were going to get really into eating and then realizing, my kids don't like it. I'm not sure I like it.
I went on a pantry clean out for that express purpose to eat my way through some of the things that I had that I was like, after I finish this, I probably will never buy this again because I don't like it. It serves no purpose for me, but I already spent my money and we use what we have.
I could do that for a while, I think. Like, I'm just sitting with some discomfort realizing how long I could probably feed us out of our pantry, but we wouldn't like what we were eating because it's all stuff like that.
Which, you know, that's where you start to get a little creative, figure out some sauces, figure out some spices, remix a couple of things, mm-hmm. right? Put it with the stuff that you like. I still made that pantry adventure fun because otherwise I too would have been like, this is miserable.
Right. Like, I really don't want to keep eating this box of Farro.
It's like, okay, let me pair this with other stuff that I do enjoy to mm-hmm. like balance this back out. Oftentimes it still comes back to that. I should want to do this thing, mm-hmm. right? I should want to eat this way. I should want to enjoy this thing. Other people are enjoying it and I want to be like these other people. So I should enjoy this, even though we don't. And that's totally okay. You don't have to enjoy that thing.
I think it's so important to understand that should as a pattern of consumerism, and that this is diet culture teaching us consumerism. Because often when we talk about food and excess and buying things we don't need, we start shaming the processed foods and the convenience foods, right? Like, people tend to be like, oh, yes, like, Americans are so wasteful because we buy these giant bags of chips at Costco, and ignore the fact that, like, a lot of us are wasteful because we're buying trendy wellness-branded, health-branded mm-hmm. items that are, mm-hmm. you know, that we actually don't end up eating.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that bag of chips is going to get eaten. I'm not worried about you wasting a bag of chips or, like, disposing of these chips that expired or gone stale. I don't see that too often. Mm-hmm. That supplement that's been in the pantry that you spent $30 on that you didn't do anything else with. Mm. You know, the greens powder that you realize, oh, that's gross.
It's so and nasty. It's,
you spent $50 and it's just sitting in the closet.
Yeah.
Collecting dust, right? Like, that sort of, I've seen it somewhere and they keep telling me it's good for me and that I should want this. And I have now abdicated my likes, desires, whatever, to other people to tell me what I like, to tell me what I want, what I need.
So it's not necessarily about we should all buy less in general. It's like we should buy more thoughtfully. We should buy what we want to buy as opposed to buying what we're told to buy.
Yeah, buy what you want to buy. And in theory, buying what you want to buy will oftentimes lead to less because you're not double spending on, like, I bought this thing, I bought all these groceries, and I didn't really know what to do with them, had no plan for them, and I'm overwhelmed. So now I went and just got, you know, some, I just ordered out.
And that would end up being less because you're not buying all the shoulds along with it.
I think that having that space to explore why you're buying what you're buying really will help you, you know, re-engineer or evolve your relationship with spending in general, with that sort of consumerism in general. Unfortunately, we can't exactly escape consumerism because we have to exchange money. Thank you, capitalism. But I think sort of doing it more intentionally is the goal here.
It feels like there is a potential here for I'm going to be more thoughtful about consumerism to become another way of saying, like, I'm just watching what I eat or I'm trying to make healthy choices. This could end up being another type of restriction, exactly the type of restriction we're trying to escape when we are working on dismantling diet culture.
Yes, I am so glad that you asked about that. The way that I sort of help people understand this is I do this really intentional grocery planning with them where I'm like, okay, before we figure out what we need to get from the store, what do we have at home right now, right? Use what you have. What are things that you have that you want to use up or need to use up? Okay, now with that, let's plan some meals around that and then figure out what you need to grab from the store. Let's make sure we plan something fun. Again, if you take the fun out of it, well, no one's enjoying this. We're all miserable now. And then sort of going from there of like, okay, now that we've done this, okay. And then sort of examining, why are you buying that cup? Or why are you buying this? Or this, like, asking the question of, if I'm going to buy this gadget or gizmo for my kitchen, what purpose does it serve? What is it doing for me, right? Sometimes I'll suggest, like, oh, give yourself a time frame. Say, I put this on my list, and then notice if you find yourself reaching for that thing that you don't have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If after this length of time you find yourself continually reaching for it, of course, by all means, get it.
Yeah.
If you realize at the end of that length of time, I didn't reach for that.
I'm trying to do this with clothes shopping where I put things on a Pinterest board, like, throughout the month. And then at the end of the month, I look and think, like, well, what have I actually been, like, I realize, like, my black pants from last year don't fit anymore. Like, I truly do need a new pair of pants. Like, pants that fit are important. But the, like, you know, Lizzo was wearing a cute pink red heart print sweatsuit the other day, and I have that saved, but I have a feeling that if I sit on it for 2 weeks, I'll be like, do I need sweatpants with pink hearts on them? I don't know.
That might make a lot of sense within your wardrobe, but then it's like, I did this thing. I went home over the holidays and I was like walking through the store with my mom and I picked up this sweater and I liked the texture of it. And I was like, oh, because I don't normally like this texture of sweaters. And my mom's like, oh, you should get that. And I like held it up to myself and I looked at it and I was like, I don't even know how I would wear this. And I stuck it right back on the rack.
Mm.
I couldn't even see it in my wardrobe. Mm. As much as I thought it was really cute. I could not figure out what in my closet I would put on with it. And so I stuck it right back on the rack. Aside from telling you about this now, I haven't actually thought about how I would wear that sweater. So clearly it had no business.
Right. You didn't come home and then get dressed every day thinking, where was that sweater? If only I had that sweater. Yeah.
Nope. It didn't cross my mind.
What I like about the observing is it's morally neutral, right? Like, you're not blaming yourself for being drawn to the sweater or the Stanley Cup even, or the whatever food items we're talking about. Like, it makes sense we're drawn to these things. They're put in front of us constantly. Mm-hmm. But then you're taking the time to think, like, am I actually noticing it? You know, if every day I'm getting dressed thinking I have no pants to wear, well, then that's something to address. And does feel less restrictive than, you know, making, like, really strict rules about, like, I'm just not shopping at all. Or, which, I mean, I know you've done, like, a buy nothing challenge. I'd love to hear about your experience with that. But I can see that for me, that concept feels like, oh, I would get into a weird headspace fast.
There was a lot of intentionality around that. It was a no, minimal buy, not a no buy, because I still swipe my debit card. It was a minimal buy, but I sort of set it up as like, okay, you still need to buy groceries. That's totally fine. You still need to pay your bills, obviously.
Right.
Now we're more so looking at this spending around like random trips to the store. I love books. How many books are you buying versus the books you're reading?
Oh, I don't want to. No, Christina, I didn't have you on this podcast to attack me. I will not be answering that question. Continue.
That's totally fine. I was like, look, if you find yourself continually reaching for this thing and realizing you don't have it, you can go ahead and buy it, but like do some research around the thing that you want so you're buying it once and not buying it five times. Mm. So that's really important to me, that I buy something once instead of having to consistently replace it because I bought it a less quality version of it. And instead of doing this like cold turkey, like wham, no more shopping, it was like, I'm going to gradually decrease this, because if this is such a part of my life, let me work on some gradual reduction. So in the early stages, I remember cleaning out my inbox, right? So I'm unsubscribing from a bunch of marketing emails, because if you keep emailing me, I'm going to want to open it and look at it and see what are the new pretty things. But if they're not in my inbox, how would I know?
Yeah.
Right. And then for my social media, because, you know, ads, I intentionally engaged with things that even if it served me an ad, wouldn't result in shopping.
Like, give an example of that.
So like, ads about nature and ads about a book and ads about, like, you know, yoga or something like that, right? Things that don't result in me wanting to shop, right? It's not a clothing brand. It's not some like kitchenware something or another. It is, look at this beautiful mountain range over here. You should come visit our mountain range.
You're not going to impulse purchase a vacation.
I'm not impulse purchasing a vacation. Yeah. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And so as shifting the way that my ads were being presented to me intentionally did wonders, right? So I'm not like, oh, this cute. Oh, it's so easy. One click. Thank you. Yeah. Making clicking to shop harder for me.
Yep. Yep. Right. I can see how that would be a useful thing. Yes.
Right. Taking out the information from my cards, you know, undoing, you know, expedited shipping things, right? Now, if I'm having to consider the amount I'm paying for shipping, I'm much less likely to click buy.
And if I have to get up and go find my credit card and my purse is in the other room.
Right. Because I don't have that number memorized anymore. All right. Well, I guess the exhilaration is over. Right. Or saying, instead of buying it online, what if I found it in the store near me?
Yeah.
Oh, I have to go to the store for that? Never mind.
Online shopping is really the whole crux of I mean, in a different life, when I didn't have kids and before online shopping took over, I was a big recreational in-person shopper. But at least then it was like contained to what I could do in a Saturday afternoon.
And this isn't to say that you can't online shop, because there's a lot of accessibility in online shopping.
Yes, it's important.
I'm not saying down with the internet of online shopping.
No, no.
By all means,
anyone who's online shopping, we need online shopping. Like, yes, how else am I buying clothes? Yeah.
It is important and useful. I'm sort of looking at if I can be more intentional about my online shopping, especially if it's around something that I am likely to be like, oh, well, you know, I can click, 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 because these were all on sale. And look at that. And I got free shipping. Woohoo. Like, right. And I think books, me, it's books.
I really am uncomfortable with how we're worried about book purchasing, Christina. I mean, I don't know that I'm really ready to look at that one.
Look, you can't see the stacks of books around me, but there are stacks.
Yeah.
I love books. It's a world to get lost in. Yes. I'm obsessed. But really stopping and saying, you have a lot of books that like serve different purposes, whether they're like fiction, nonfiction, whatever, but you're not currently reading them. Mm-hmm. So you're spending money that you're not actually getting any use out of, other than they're pretty. Mm-hmm. They look good on your shelf. They look good in the stack. But books aren't ornaments. Okay. At least not in this aspect. Okay, right? Okay. There are some ornamental books, but the books I buy are not ornaments.
Yeah.
And I think the longer I was in that sort of minimal buy, the more my relationship to buying shifted. I started to observe more of, oh, okay, am I think the only reason I thought about that is because I saw so-and-so do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fine. Oh, I thought I wanted that. I didn't really want it. I thought I needed that. I didn't really need it. I've gone this long without it, and I didn't notice that I didn't have it, right?
Yeah, that's really interesting.
The buying became more intentional, where it's like, okay, I am now, when I'm thinking about going to the store, I have a list. Here are the items I need to purchase from the store because I no longer have any more of them.
I do see the value in making lists. I used to not be a very good grocery list maker, and I've really come around on that one.
The grocery list is helpful, but then also I'm a Target girly.
Oh, yeah.
And to pause my meanders through Target and be like, let's find a new place to meander.
Yeah.
As much as we love to meander around Target, Let's find a new place to meander.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when I go into Target, now I have a list of items I need to purchase. Mm-hmm. I need trash bags. I am out of trash bags, mm-hmm. right? Did I use up all the things I had? I just recently purchased skincare because I spent the last good chunk of time using up all the skincare I had.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, it's
right. That was part of my minimal, was like, use what you have.
Use it up.
Use up all of that. I mean, I just bought toilet paper.
Because there was so much extra toilet paper. Yeah, no, I get it.
I had what I thought was appropriate for an individual. So it was I had a back stock of two or three big things back there, but it wasn't too much. But I was like, you know what? Let's just use what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more I did that, the more I was like, man, there is a limit of sort of having stock of something, right? Like having a backup to where it's now I'm just hoarding.
Yeah. Or sometimes I will buy more toilet paper, even though I know we have the back stock, because I'm like, well, now I don't have to worry about the back stock running out. Like, I don't know. There's a weird, I need to preserve the back, but for what?
That was the question I kept asking myself. Okay, but for what?
I mean, some of it's COVID trauma, right?
And so that was me sort of challenging that, being like, okay, so we're not in that acute time.
No, we're not. Yeah.
And so it is okay for me to purchase new toilet paper. It is okay for me to use the back stock I have on hand. Mm-hmm. It is okay for me to use all of this hand soap that I have on hand instead of buying new hand soap.
Mm-hmm.
It is okay for me to use all this skincare, this toothpaste, whatever. It is okay for me to use the back stock of food that I purchased during the peak of the COVIDs, because we're not there.
So one area that's really tricky for me, and I think a lot of listeners can probably relate to this, is shopping to solve a problem. And so this can be food related, but this can also be, I just did it last weekend. My kids keep losing their hairbrushes, and then getting out the door in the morning, we're stressed trying to find a hairbrush. So I bought 5 hairbrushes and I bought them each a basket to keep their own set of hair supplies in. And that solved a problem, but it also, by the time I ordered the baskets that fit the shelf and bought the hair supplies, and then, we bought more hair elastics too, was it really a problem that needed to be solved with shopping? I'm not totally sure. It is making my life somewhat easier in the morning, and I also bought a bunch of stuff. Do you see what I'm saying? There's an endless list of minor irritation, discomfort, friction point in your family life that you can solve with an Amazon Prime order.
What was their consequence for losing the hairbrushes?
Screaming and people being stressed getting out the door.
That was your consequence. What was their consequence?
They didn't like it either. I mean, they don't like screaming.
But did they go to school with their hair not brushed? Did they have to go a few days with their hair not brushed?
They wouldn't even care. They don't want their hair brushed.
Then why'd you replace the brush?
Okay, I hear you. See that?
If I want you to stop losing that brush, you need your own consequence.
And the consequence is not mommy will buy a thing.
Yeah, it's, I guess my hair just won't be brushed. I will learn to take care of my things. If I realize if I lose this brush, I'm not just going to get another one.
So were we to institute some kind of pause there, I guess the pause would be can I find a way to solve this problem?
Can we solve this problem with what we already have in this house? Maybe they need to do a little aerial and brush it with a fork.
I mean, I don't hate that idea. When I unpack that a little further, it's I'm stressed about sending them to school with tangled hair because at some point I'm going to have to deal with those tangles. And the more tangles they are, the more stressful that is. So there's that. But there's also like the judgment, right? Like, is the first grade teacher going to be like, why is your six-year-old coming to school with messy hair? You know, what's going on at home? It's the performance thing again that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because there's a... in theory, you're sending your kids to school with clean clothes and their school bag and they've got lunch. Like,
yeah, they're fine.
So we're saying that our hair is the indicator that everything has gone awry at home? What's happening here?
Yeah.
What's the conversation that we're having here?
No, it's artificially high standards that...
Yes.
Yeah, that I'm responding to and enforcing.
I think the same can be said, I think, in terms of, like, the sort of solving a problem of identifying what is the problem and does this need to be solved immediately?
Well, often it does because it's like 4 a.m. and I'm looking at my phone. And so I think I could feel like a more efficient together human being if I quickly ordered this thing that would solve this problem that I've suddenly convinced myself is a real issue in our lives.
I'm not saying that you can't sometimes solve it that way. I'm still looking at the why. Why is that the solution? Are there other solutions available to me?
Yeah.
What might they be?
It's about wanting to feel effective and on top of things and like somehow ordering things feels like I'm checking things off a to-do list that like wouldn't have needed to be that long if I didn't put all those things on a to-do list. Yeah. Fascinating. Wow. We have a couple listener questions I'm going to fold in here. This person says, I would love your thoughts on balancing ethics and intuitive eating, especially with regards to climate change.
One of the things that I like to remind people is if the decision is now harming you, it's still harming the environment. You are part of the environment, right? I went to the store the other day to pick up some sausage to make a meal. And I was looking at, okay, well, they have things on sale. Of the things on sale, because this is within my price range, right? This is one of my ethics is I'm not spending that much money on stuff. They had two different ones on sale. One was like a national brand and one was a local brand. And so I said, oh, you know what? In theory, this local brand is local, so I'm not spending as much to get this to me, right? There's less CO2 emissions to get this to me, so I'm going to go for this since they're the same price, right? If those two would have been different prices, I would not have gone for the local one because it was more expensive.
Mm.
That's not helping me with this whole environmental situation, right? Like, that's not solving that for me. And now that's dipping into my food budget, meaning that I have less money to spend on feeding myself.
Right.
Right? So I'm going to sort of prioritize it in that way. And then I might ask myself, what are the other ways that I can impact the climate that don't always come from my plate?
Yeah, I think about that a lot. I think we've really boiled climate change down to food in a way that doesn't make sense to me.
Not us. It wasn't you and me.
Thank you.
They did that.
Yeah.
It is much easier to blame the individual than to accept responsibility and accountability as a system.
Love that.
This is the system saying, oh, no, you cannot hold me accountable for this. Instead, I'm going to put the burden back on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if only you would eat locally.
Shop the farmer's market. I love that, right? That's you shopping local and keeping money in your local economy. I support that. That is never going to supersede what is happening at a factory. No. It's never going to supersede what is happening with these other bigger systems that have gotten completely out of control.
It doesn't really make a dent in what the oil companies are doing.
Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
Not even a little bit. It does not impact war either, right? Like,
it doesn't impact war. So, yeah. I love what you're saying. We're part of the environment, so our needs really matter. And you don't have to make, quote, perfect choices around food in order to be an environmentally responsible citizen.
If you have access to that local thing and it still makes sense price range-wise, go for it. If not, that's not the end all be all here.
Yeah.
There are other ways that you can positively impact your environment, like using what you have.
We keep coming back to that.
Use what you have.
I'm going to spend a lot of time in my pantry after this conversation. On that note, this next question makes me laugh a lot and really sums up a lot of what we're talking about. This person says, why can't I ever finish a bottle of salad dressing? Do I just not actually want salad? Is Trader Joe's too good at selling me fun flavors? Do I just get tired of eating the same one all the time? Wait, can I freeze half of it? I hate looking at the half-empty sauce bottles in the door of the fridge, but aren't they supposed to make cooking easier? This feels connected to the draw of 5-ingredient and 1-pot dinners, too. I'm like, this is such relatable content to me.
I love this. Okay, so you could put that salad dressing anywhere you want it, my friend. It does not just have to go on a salad. That is a misnomer. It might be a salad dressing, but that does not mean the only place it belongs is on a salad. And it might be that you don't particularly favor that salad dressing. Also, how many salad dressings do you have? The more you have, the more overwhelmed you're going to feel because you have too many options you can't figure out, right?
Yeah.
Reduce the number of options we have here. Make this easier on you. Stick those salad dressings wherever you want them. Maybe they're on a salad. Maybe you made like a rice bowl or something and you drizzled some fun vinaigrette on top.
Mm-hmm.
Marinate something in it. Yeah. You know, like dip your French fries in it. I don't care. Dip your pizza in it.
Ooh.
Yeah, I love dipping pizza in salad dressing. But you'd have to check the bottle to see if you can freeze them. Some of you can, some of you can't. It also depends on what kind of bottle it's in. Mm. Is it in a glass bottle versus a plastic bottle? Because that's going to change some of the things that are happening there.
And we're not buying special freezer containers, guys, because
use what you have.
Virginia solving a problem that didn't exist.
Use what you have.
Yeah.
I stopped buying containers a while ago, and a lot of the things I buy come in glass mason jars. So I just keep the mason jar for my spaghetti sauce.
Oh, sure. Sure, that's the thing people do. I grew up in a house that we did that very religiously, and I think sometimes I'm rebelling by buying cute Tupperware.
I think a lot of times we spend a lot of time rebelling, and I think this practice sort of brings us back to the center of like,
yeah.
Okay, but what do I want instead of what am I rebelling against?
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah, do what you want with your salad dressing. I would say drizzle it on whatever you'd like, but then also get to the heart of which of these salad dressings do you actually enjoy and see yourself using.
Mm.
Do a taste test versus I just bought this for this recipe.
Yep.
Right. Am I buying this salad dressing because this is a salad dressing I like and would use multiple places?
Mm-hmm.
Or did I buy it for a specific recipe?
I think that's what she's getting at with the comment about the 5-ingredient and 1-pot mm-hmm. dinners. Like a lot of those mm-hmm. recipes are very misleading, right? Because in theory, a 1-pot dinner is terrific. The number of 1-pot dinners I've looked at from the New York Times cooking app that is like, start by roasting a tray of sweet potatoes. And I'm like, well, already.
That's like, more than.
I understand we technically only use 1 pot because a baking tray is not a pot, but this is not a 1-pot recipe.
Semantics, right? Yeah. Do the taste test and you're allowed to substitute. If you look at this and you're like, I would never use that salad dressing again, what's something that's similar to that I already have in stock?
And a lot of times the salad dressings are things that, not that I'm saying we all have to make salad dressing from scratch, but like you might have a very like parallel ingredient that you're like, oh, I just mm-hmm. needed soy sauce. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or if it's like a vinaigrette based one, I don't need that specific vinaigrette one. I already have a vinaigrette on hand.
Yeah.
I don't need this raspberry balsamic vinaigrette. I have balsamic vinaigrette. I don't need the strawberry balsamic vinaigrette. I have vinaigrette.
I think there's so many categories of food where we do this. And I do think, yeah, she's right. Trader Joe's is selling us the fun flavors, right?
And we also don't have to buy multiples of the fun flavors.
Mm.
Maybe just buy one to try and then make your way through that one. And then, okay, by the end of it, you've now come to your conclusion on whether you'd ever buy it again.
Yeah.
Oh, now when I go back, I'm going to try a new one. And then if you find yourself being like, man, I really miss that other flavor. Oh, now you know. I want that other one back.
And if you don't want to make your way through the whole bottle, that feels like good information to have as well. Like if it's sitting there half empty because you've just lost interest.
Then phone a friend.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, friend, would you like to come try this salad dressing? I want to send it to a new home so it can live out its salad dressing life.
Oh, that's a lovely thought. I love the idea of doing pantry trades with friends. We've covered so much ground. You've blown my mind about many things. I feel like this whole consumerism piece of dismantling diet culture is something I am just beginning to wrap my brain around. So I really appreciate you taking the time with us to help us start to connect some of these dots, because it is a lot and it is a lot of hard work. And I just want to hold space for anyone else feeling panicked by some of this. Like, it is a lot to think about extracting from this system.
It is, which is why I don't rush it. It's a thing that you can take and like slowly peel back the layers of that onion and not feel the need to go so cold turkey.
That's the diet culture showing up again, right? Is like, once we've identified the problems with the system, we have this need to course correct really aggressively and do it all at once and do it perfectly.
Yeah, that's less diet culture so much as the 16 characteristics of white supremacy, which would be like sense of urgency and like one right way.
Yes, that. We will link to something about that to help folks read up more on that. All right. Well, we end every episode of Burnt Toast with Butter, which is our recommendation segment. You do not have to recommend something we should buy, but it can be something we buy.
Currently, my thing has been making my way through my tea collection.
Ooh, that sounds delightful.
Yeah. I've almost romanticize it in like a helpful way of like, what's my tea selection for today? Let me shop my own tea selection. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I've totally forgot about that one. I don't even remember if I like it. Let me try it.
That's something you could do with a lot of different collections, shall we call them, in our homes.
Shop my tea, shop my own closet.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is something I am working on. My recommendation is re-wearing outfits a lot. I think we have a lot of pressure on us. I think about this both in terms of like my day-to-day life is I work from home and I'm a mom. So like I'm not going a lot of places besides like dropping off a kid at an activity, like often not even leaving the car. Like there's very little need for me to change outfits like Monday through Friday. And so I've really been experimenting with like, oh, I can actually rewear. And especially like in winter where we're not hot and sweaty all the time, like I can wear the same sweater multiple days. And as long as I don't spill something all over it, which is, you know, a possibility. The people who see me on Zoom don't know that I wore the sweater yesterday. But even with like events, you know, I also do public speaking and like going to events to support authors and things like that. And so often I have this pressure of like, I need a new outfit for this event. And it's like, no, the same event outfit can work for two occasions. Like
remix it, change the accessories, yeah. Swap something out, like play with the color scheme, play with a little texture. That's been my jam recently is like learning how to style things and remix your own wardrobe.
There's so much there. And then you don't feel like, oh, I need another dress for, you know, I mean, I feel like that too for a lot of folks, like during high wedding season, when you're in that season of life where you're going to endless weddings, and you feel like you need a new dress for, like, you don't. Even if it's the same friend group, like, it's fine.
Thankfully, it's fine. All my friends are married and aren't, you know, this is good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm way out of wedding season. We're in divorce season in my stage of life.
Congratulations.
You don't need outfits for that. It's pretty great. No. So.
No, throw a divorce party. Those are a thing these days.
There's plenty of celebrating. The problem is sometimes it's more in the shopping category. Which that, honestly, I can support. Like, if you are shopping to reclaim your space.
Yeah, do that.
Like, I think another piece of this we didn't talk about is, like, just, like, we wouldn't want to demonize comfort eating. Like, there can be a place for some comfort shopping at times.
Absolutely.
When you're going through a season of life.
Absolutely. No, in those contexts, I totally understand. And it's like, but you know why you're doing it. You're addressing that it's comfort shopping.
Yes. 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 Definitely. And maybe still, we don't need more hairbrushes in my house. Christina, this was really fantastic. Thank you so much for being here. Tell folks where they can follow you and how we can support your work.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You can find me on Instagram at Encouraging Dietitian, or you can follow me on TikTok, same handle. And then I also have a podcast, Intuitive Eating for the Culture.
We will link to all of that. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to Burnt Toast. Once again, if you'd like to support the show, please subscribe for free in your podcast player. Tell a friend about this episode and consider a paid subscription to the Burnt Toast newsletter. It's just $5 a month or $50 for the year. You get a ton of cool perks and you keep this an ad and sponsor-free space. Find out more at virginiasoulsmith.substack.com. The Burnt Toast podcast is produced and hosted by me, Virginia Soul Smith. You can follow me on Instagram at @V_SoulSmith. Our transcripts are edited and formatted by Corinne Fay, who runs at SellTrade Plus, an Instagram account where you can buy and sell plus-size clothing. The Burnt Toast logo is by Deanna Lowe. Our theme music is by Jeff Bailey and Chris Maxwell, and Tommy Heron is our audio engineer. Thanks for listening and supporting anti-diet, body liberation journalism.